During Opera News on the Air today, some of the excitement of the 1916 Vienna premiere will be recaptured by two of opera's all-time great singers, Maria Gerritzer and Lotte Lehmann. Miss Gerritzer was...
Welcome to the Operatic Pastcast, a presentation and preservation of operatic memories and impressions produced by Donald Kollop.
...for the opera's premiere. This program was pre-recorded a few weeks ago when Miss Lehmann was at the Metropolitan Opera here in New York to assist in the direction of this season's production of Der Rosenkavalier. John Gutman, an assistant manager of the Metropolitan Opera, will MC the program.
Episode 82. On February 2nd, 1963, radio listeners heard an interview conducted by John Gutman of Lotte Lehmann and Maria Gerritzer, two sopranos well known for their appearances in operas by Richard Strauss. In this part, they talk about the two versions of Ariadne auf Naxos. Part 1 of 2.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Richard Strauss has been a composer quite prominently represented in this opera house for quite a number of decades. And yet, the opera you are hearing today, Ariadne auf Naxos, has never been performed at the Metropolitan Opera before this season. And to tell you something about this unfamiliar work, we are greatly honored this afternoon to have with us two famous and fabulous ladies of opera. They created the leading roles in the world premiere of the second version of Ariadne. More in a moment about that paradoxical statement about the second version. We'll talk to you about that in a moment at some length because I think it's interesting. And now it is my special and great pleasure to introduce Maria Gerritzer and Lotte Lehmann, who really need no introduction to anybody who has any idea about opera in our time. And I feel if we cannot learn some behind-the-scenes facts and fancies about Ariadne auf Naxos from such knowing prima donnas as Madame Gerritzer and Madame Lehmann, we never shall. And the way I can help is by restricting my interference to an absolute minimum, and although I know I shall find that very difficult, I will do my best. Now, Madame Gerritzer told me the other day I should not ask her about the first version because she'll have something terrible to say about it if I did. So since I never do what I'm told to do, and even less ever refrain from doing what I'm told not to do, I will put this question to Madame Gerritzer. Let me just refresh your mind. What we call the first version was a strange concoction. It consisted of a German short version of Molière's Le Bourgeois Gentilhomme, which Mr. von Hofmannsthal had translated, and it was then followed by the opera Ariadne, or rather what in our version today is called the opera Ariadne, that is to say, the opera proper, in contradistinction to the prologue. Now, somehow it didn't work, because 4 years after the first performance of that original version, they got together again, or rather they got together very much sooner, but they decided on a new version and then premiered it 4 years later, and the first one is completely forgotten. In fact, it is so much forgotten that I cannot find a copy of it anywhere. Now, Madame Gerritzer, you were in both. You were in the first version where we first had the Molière, and you were in the second one. Why did the first one not work?
Because it was boring. It was a wonderful sleeping pill. Everybody fell asleep.
Now, may I ask you this? This is a very good answer. Starting out well. But I also know that it is perfectly true because you find it even in the letters between Hofmannsthal and Strauss. But let me ask you this.
Surely.
You agree with me that the opera proper was the same, more or less the same.
Yes.
I know that Zeppinetari was somewhat different. So what was boring about it?
Because there was no connection between the opera and the Vorspiel.
Oh, I see. Well, that is very interesting.
And you when see, it came to Ariadne, the people didn't know why they had that first...
Right, yeah. Well, what happened is that the original was a Molière play, and Hugo von Hofmannsthal thought that was a very smart idea, to have the play first. It didn't work. It didn't work for many reasons. As you say, people were bored. People came for the opera, and yet for what? An hour and a half, they sat and had a play. Now, who played in that play? Surely not the opera singers.
I don't.
No, you didn't play in it.
No, I don't recall it. But Hofmannsthal, I don't recall that he was very happy about it. Right away, they had the argument with Richard Strauss about it, and they, right there and then, they decided that it has to be changed because the critics and the public resented the first version of the Vorspiel.
Madame Lehmann, did you see the first version at that time? I know you were not in it.
I sang Echo.
You did?
Yes.
But not in the premiere?
No.
Yeah.
Well, I sang it 1912, I think it was.
To put our friends of the radio audience into the picture, I'll ask you a question. I know the answer, but they're not. Why were you not in your role in the first version?
You know, there was no role for me. The echo was a role just for a beginner.
Yeah, that's very true. We are talking about the role of the composer, which is now that wonderful role only in the Vorspiel, only in the prelude. It doesn't appear in the opera. And in that first version in which Madame Jeritza sang Ariadne, there was no composer, as we all know. Did you ever see at that time, did you see the original version with the Molière
in
the beginning?
Yes, but I really have forgotten it. It is long ago, and I have a very vague remembrance of these performances. I really don't know.
Well, that's a bad sign, or it's rather a good sign for what we are discussing. Obviously, Madame Jeritza is quite right, because it was a bore.
Yeah.
The people didn't want it, the critics didn't want it, you saw it and don't even remember it. That's not a good sign.
Yeah,
I'm quite
true.
Sure the first time you saw Rosenkavalier, you remembered it, or the first time you saw Salome, you wouldn't say you don't remember it. Now, I'm already breaking my promise, I won't talk so much, but I'll come to that later.
Please do so. I love to hear your voice.
That is very kind of you, Madame Jeritza. The point, however, is that the audience
the more
wants
you
to hear
talk,
you.
The less I have to talk.
Yes, that is very good. But the trouble is that nobody except my wife will agree with that because the audience wants to hear you and Madame Lehmann. You see, that's our problem. But anyhow.
Well, you talk for me, Jon, and you tell everything what is necessary.
That's all right, but you contradict me if I say something that is wrong.
If you're wrong, I will say no.
Right. Well, I will contradict you now, because you said Strauss and Hofmannsthal got together right away and agreed that won't do. That is very true as far as Hofmannsthal is concerned and very untrue as far as Strauss is concerned. Now, if you can contradict me on that, we'll have an interesting subject. Can you?
That's very interesting because Strauss told me he's very stubborn, but he know that Hofmannsthal is right.
But you do agree that it took Mr. von Hofmannsthal quite a while to convince him. I brought the letters.
Yes, but I don't think it was very, very convincing.
I think Strauss just wanted to go on to his next opera, and because that's the way he was.
That's right.
Well, you both knew him well. Isn't that true? Ariadne was done, and he wanted to go on to, what was it, Frau Schatten?
And what is next, he right away, say, after the premiere, he said, what comes next?
Right, Madame Lehmann.
Nevertheless, I am surprised that he didn't want that, because it would have been such a challenge for Strauss to combine this comedy of the first of the prelude with the opera, with the tragic opera.
Yeah.
And also the mixed up with these commedia d'arte and the singers.
Yeah, you mean in the prelude?
Because
the mixture between the seria, between the serious opera and the buffa you had in Ariadne,
proper
too. Well, they didn't really agree very much. How about the composer? You know, can you tell us something about the genesis of the role?
What is the genesis? I don't understand that word.
The creation of the world. How did it come about, let me put it that way. The Genesis is the beginning of the world, I think.
I think he had written the part of the composer for a very excellent singer in the Vienna Opera. And I came 1916 to Vienna, and I had it as an understudy, which really hurt my feelings very much, because in Hamburg I had sung already my whole repertory, and people liked me.
Madame Lehmann, who was the singer who was supposed to have sung the composer?
Marie Gotthard Schoder. And she cancelled a rehearsal shortly before the premiere.
How did you get her to do that?
Oh, no. I have never been bad in my life. Not in this way.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
And I was called to the rehearsal because Strauss was there, and without the composer, the whole rehearsal couldn't have.
You mean there was no?
Place.
You were the understudy. You were the official understudy.
I was the understudy. And then after the rehearsal, Strauss, with the brutality of a composer, nicht wahr? He decided very quickly that I should sing the premiere, which was marvelous for me.
And what happened to poor Gotthard Schoder?
Yeah, now I hated very much to do that to her, because I admired her very much. And Gregor, who was our director at that time, has written in his memoirs that it was the only time of his life that a soprano had refused to sing a role for another soprano. Well, now, I don't want to put a whole halo around my head.
You like to get the role.
I said very quickly, yes.
Yes,
Lottchen, where come I in?
What's
don't
the matter
you remember?
With you?
You were spending... Lottchen, you were standing there, and I said, he said, I'm without a composer. I said, there's a born composer standing right in the first wing.
Oh, I didn't
with
know
the
that.
Most beautiful voice. Why
oh,
don't
really?
You take care?
Oh,
well, you see what you missed.
You started right away there, and then in the rehearsal to take Gutheil Schroeder's place, which she was ill. She had a laryngitis.
I know.
And she couldn't attend. Without any warning, she stayed home. And Strauss said, now what will we do without the composer? We cannot. I said, here, he's your understudy. She's a wonderful voice, and you have to take just only. And she starts to sing and conquered, and the premiere was signed to her.
Wonderful, Mitzi. Thank you after all these years for your help.
But let
and
me
she
ask
was
you.
Really poor, wonderful.
But poor Madame Gutheil Schroeder wasn't as sick as all that. Am I to understand she could have sung the premiere, only Strauss.
But she couldn't anymore because Strauss gave
like
it to Lotte Lehmann.
Well, we can well understand that. Although, in all fairness, we must say Madame Gutheil Schroeder was a very
great. Oh, she was a very great.
Wonderful. Was the first.
Now, that Madame Lehmann has told us the story, and you have added to it, Madame Gerritsen, I will now tell you that Strauss, and I'm sure you remember that, was violently opposed of having any one of you ladies in there because he was sick and tired of having girls. No, wait a moment. Strauss wanted it, and Hofmannsthal didn't want it.
Yeah.
There's a letter where Hofmannsthal, where Strauss says, I want another Raffrano.
Yeah.
And Hofmannsthal said, I'm so sick and tired of these girls with their trousers on. Mm-hmm. And then Strauss explained it to him, and we all agreed that Strauss was completely right and Hofmannsthal was wrong. Can you imagine the composer sung by a tenor?
That would be horrible.
No, yeah, and you know, Strauss said, I asked him once, why have you written these two roles for women? And he said, can you bring a tenor who is very young, is an excellent actor, and has a wonderful voice. If you can do that, then a man could sing it.
Yes.
But that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yes, but our Estwick, I think Bacchus.
Ah,
Estwick would be the perfect composer.
Yeah.
The figure, the youth,
yes,
everything.
And,
but he said, I cannot use that because he was the Bacchus. But I can see that our interview will be full of controversies.
Well, that's fine.
That is just fine.
That's what we are here for. Now, the story about this, let's talk about this for a moment because I know everybody's interested in that. The question of a boy being sung by a girl, which is, of course, much more prominently exemplified in Rosenkavalier than it is. And you all know, I have never seen it, and I'm grateful that I haven't. Sometimes it has been tried. Rosenkavalier has been sung with a tenor. And anybody who has ever heard it has told me it is horrible beyond belief. Yes. It is rather strange, a young tenor being young and handsome enough to sing a boy, allegedly 17 years old, that just doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist, that's it.
Yeah.
I think Oesbich could have done it, but there was only one person like
in one opera house, Madame.
Yeah, that's
Madame
it.
But why couldn't we have sung the boys? Because we had the youth, we had everything what's required of those parts.
I agree with you, and so did Richard Strauss. It seems Mr. Hofmannsthal didn't.
Yeah.
And I think it has always been a perfectly lovely idea.
No, I think he was always a ladies' hater.
Hofmannsthal? Well, that's a new one. Of course, no, the problem is much
but
older.
But why
than...
don't you wrote a part like that, which required a woman?
I think, Madame Gerritsen and Madame Lehmann, if you permit me to say so, I think it was the other way around. It wasn't that Hofmannsthal was a lady's hater. It was that Strauss liked the ladies so much. Could that possibly be the reason?
Oh, no.
No.
With his wife on the side, she would have killed us all.
I've never yet known that a husband is prevented by a wife from being a lady's lover. That's
no one
on
he adored his wife.
That was a wonderful marriage. Yes. Oh, no, no, no.
No, but I didn't. Ladies, you really, I mean, you surprised me. You put words into my mouth. I said nothing of the kind. I was talking strictly in artistic terms. I was talking in terms of Richard Strauss as a composer.
But it required you named, our answer.
You
name
Madame Lehmann, Madame Gerritsen, will you name one really great tenor part in all of Strauss's work? tell me one.
No, the Kaiser in Frauenschatten.
Relatively speaking, yes.
Yeah. But again, it's a very important.
Again, not a typical, not the way you think of a Caruso partner.
No, I mean, no.
Or even a German
no,
Caruso.
Never,
you
never.
See, there's Bacchus in our Ariadne.
Yeah.
There's the Kaiser, the Emperor.
Yeah.
In this, as a whole, the tenors are buffos or character parts, like, say, Herod in Salome.
Yes.
There is no, in terms of Wagner or Verdi or Puccini, the tenor as a lover, as a young, radiant lover, does not exist.
But he knew Salome. That he can depend on us. We were really good.
Now you're confirming.
We never caused him any trouble.
Now you're confirming what I'm saying. It isn't that Hofmannsthal didn't like you. It is that Strauss liked you so much. Well, let's not pursue this too far, but it's an interesting... It is an interesting sideline. Now, you were talking about Bacchus, and I think we are jumping the gun a little because we mustn't assume that our audiences know everything about the work. We are now talking, let's have a short outline. The version we are talking about, the second version, did away with the Molière, and Hofmannsthal wrote a lovely prelude, something which I don't think exists anywhere else in opera, a prelude which takes place backstage, as it were.
Yeah.
Isn't that the main attraction
yes.
of the
production? Yes, the whole comedy is enchanting.
Yeah. It is in a back, I think, in a dining room where they move out all the furniture and they have to rehearse.
That's right,
there.
But
yeah.
it's in a castle and it's backstage. It is so particularly interesting because it says rather nasty things about sopranos and tenors, does it not?
Yeah, no, it takes a mask, so the lovely mask from our faces.
I remember, you see, what we...
Wait a minute, do we have such a mask?
I would not dare to have an opinion on that subject. I'll leave that to you. Now, what happens is that the tenor who sings Bacchus in the opera and the soprano, the wonderful dramatic soprano who sings Ariadne in the opera, appear both... In the prelude,
that's
and
right.
they come out, and the story is this is really the whole thing is so wonderful about true about
the
artists.
Farce,
the
yeah.
story is that the composer is forced to shorten it. You know the.
No.
the
she was under crossfire. One comes and you have to cut something from the prima donna. She's crazy. And then you have to cut. And then I come cut something from the tenor. He's no good.
The composer has to cut the show because Mr. Jourdain, the original or whoever the rich man is, said fireworks at 9 o'clock, and I want both operas, the comic and the tragic one, must be over at the same time. And you better change it. And the composer first says no, and then he is forced to do it, and then. The prima donna comes over and says, take stuff away from the tenor. Nobody
That's
wants
right.
to hear
That's
those
right.
high notes all evening long. And then the mm-hmm. tenor comes to the composer and says, well, you should know what they said better than I do. The tenor said to the composer, who wants to see that woman front stage all evening long? She hawks the show. That's what he said. Well, so we have a rather true picture of operatic life right from the beginning. Now, let me ask you this. Some people have felt... that the two parts in the version that we now hear, which is the only one that is still being performed, really don't quite fit together.
Which two parts? You mean
the prologue? No, the prologue and the opera
yeah.
proper. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I don't think so at all. I think it's a wonderful introduction for the opera. Don't you think so?
I certainly do think so, but some people don't. They think there's really no connection. The first one is backstage gossip, as it were, then the personalities are different. You have the composer, who is the most important part. You, both of you, have sung Ariadne. You have nothing in the prologue. You come in, you say, I want to see the Count right away,
yeah.
and I can't have it. And take
but that is so amusing, I think. I think that that the curtain opens before the curtain
yeah.
really
yeah.
opens. I think it's yeah. very, very
I agree,
very charming.
But it is something very special. You cannot think of any other opera that has, as it were, a glimpse behind backstage
yeah.
before the opera really starts.
I
think
agree
that,
with you.
That
I
is
agree.
The main attraction.
I agree with you, my dear
work.
Friend, absolutely, because I think with the seriousness of Ariadne, of the opera itself, that Vorspiel is a mockery. It
yeah.
is a good comedy, everything, yeah. but I still think it's nothing to do with Ariadne. It just showed that a crazy nouveau riche invite those famous mm. artists and want to put on for his guests a show, and behind the scene...
They will not have a fight.
No, I mean they have a fight in that Vorspiel. You know, everybody comes
yeah.
to the composer, say, "I do that, and to the end, that poor composer gets half crazy."
Yeah.
You don't know what?
I like that very much. I like Oscar.
I like the connection.
Well, you
I
see,
like it too.
The contradiction, however, continues into the opera proper, too. The opera, we always talk about the opera Ariadne, what we now call the real act, as if it were thoroughly what the Italians call opera seria, but it isn't, because after all, our gay buffo characters walk in all the time. There's this, and I agree with both of you, it wasn't I who was saying that the two don't fit together. I just say it is a type of opera completely of its own kind. I cannot think of any other opera that has the opera in the foreground and the backstage thing at the same time. Also, the mixture of the serious part in Ariadne with the buffo parts. For instance, you really should tell our audiences, Madame Lehmann, what happens in Ariadne at the beginning of the opera? I would like to hear about the scene, what happens to Ariadne, and then when Zerbinetta comes on, you know what I mean?
No, Ariadne, who has been deserted by Theseus, yeah, lives now alone on this deserted island, and her only companions are really the elements. The Naiade, who comes, is the element of the water, and Triade, the trees, yeah, and Echo, who is the empty voice of wind.
Yeah.
And these three, that is so beautiful, the beginning of the opera, when the music has this rustling,
yeah,
as if one hears the elements,
exactly,
as if one hears water and trees,
yeah,
and the wind. And she complains, she wants only that death comes.
Yes.
No, she likes to be alone. She likes to be left alone, and she sleeps
suddenly
most of the time.
Yeah, no, she is unhappy, and she wants to die. And
she's miserable, but
yeah,
I don't know why.
Madame Gerrit says she is miserable because she's been deserted by her lover. Isn't that a good enough reason?
Well, I don't know if she was deserted. She expected him. She said, "Bald aber naht ein Wunder."
No. She means death with that.
At least she says she means it.
Yeah.
Madame Gerrit says, "I really think you should have sung Zerbinetta the way you talk." Because, let me get this in Zerbinetta.
It is true, I think, Ariadne.
I know you did.
But before she starts to sing, she sleeps the whole time, and they have to wake her up, those three girls.
Well, Madame Gerrit, haven't you done that sometimes when you were unhappy? You sleep. It's a good solution for unhappiness.
No,
it is not.
Well, maybe too.
Yeah. No, but why I say you really should have sung Zerbinetta is because that what you just said is perfectly right. Only Ariadne shouldn't say it. Ariadne says, "I'm lonely and deserted by that man, and I won't wait for death." And then Zerbinetta. Now Zerbinetta, let's see, is a member of the.
Could you rephrase your last couple of statements while we take
that?
Can I
just mal Augenblick erholen?
Yeah,
I'm a bit
of but it goes very well. What I was saying is that, why I say Madame Gerrit, and I was joking, of course, really should have sung Zerbinetta. What do I mean by that? Zerbinetta is the female member of that buffo company that comes in interrupting the serious part of it all the time. And she says, when Ariadne said, "Well, I'm so lonely and I'm deserted and I want to die," and she said, "Don't tell me any stories. You're not waiting for death. You're just waiting for a new boyfriend." Isn't that what
Yes, that is true. That is true, but I don't think that Ariadne will agree to that.
She doesn't.
Ariadne waits for it. Then Bacchus comes, the god of joy and wine.
Everything
and
is all right.
Well, this is a good question. When is everything all right? When she goes with him, does she still believe he's dead?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. When he takes her in his arms, then she realizes that it's life which takes her again.
Yeah.
I think so.
And does anyone remember what Zerbinetta says after that? Zerbinetta says, well, in her aria, when she said, well, trouble is, we like so many of them, and then she says, all the time a new one comes.
Yes,
see,
and it's always the same.
It's always the same. We obviously will be faithful. We never are.
Yeah.
And when the new one comes, we remain stum, stum,
stum,
silent, silent. Another word to say, that's what she says at the end.
Thank you for listening to the Operatic Past Cast. Visit the website at operaticpastcast.com. This is your producer, Donald Cullop.